hard, heavy, and hell. Badass music for badass listeners.
This is Pariah Burke. In this episode of the podcast is my full interview with Ace Von Johnson of LA Guns and Faster Pussycat. You heard excerpts of this interview on the radio in the Hard, Heavy, and Hair show number 231. Now listen to the full, uncut, uncensored interview with Ace Von Johnson. To hear the music discussed during the interview and played by LA Guns and Faster Pussycat, stream Hard, Heavy, and Hair show number 231 on demand, 25 hours a day, 8 days a week, at pariahrocks.com. Ace Von Johnson of LA Guns, thank you very much for joining me on the Hard, Heavy, and Hair show. How are you doing?
I'm doing very well, Pariah. How are you?
I'm good, man. Thanks.
Yeah, nice to be here.
Well, thank you. Thank you for making the time. So I saw you play in Portland, and you guys brought the house down.
Thank you.
How was the Seattle gig after that?
Seattle was great. Kind of the same size crowd, maybe 400 or 500 people. Really enthusiastic. A lot of fun. Nice to see some friends there as well, both in Portland and Seattle. Yeah, it's good. Good little weekend after Thanksgiving.
And how was your Thanksgiving?
It's kind of a loaded question. I spent most of it at the airport traveling for those shows. So, but I stopped by Danny Nordahl's house, my bass player in Faster Pussycat, and had a quick little bite with him. And then from there went to the Rainbow and had a plate of their infamous all-you-can-eat Thanksgiving meal. And then from there went to LAX and caught a flight. So that was kind of my day in a nutshell.
So speaking of Faster Pussycat, you mentioned to me that you're sort of still in Faster Pussycat. Can you explain that?
After 10 years being in the band, it's not like I quit. It's not like I got fired. I just can't dictate my entire life around their sort of the schedule that the band does nowadays is pretty much like all or nothing. So they did a 2.5 month summer tour that I had in so many words just said I wasn't interested in touring like that earlier than that. So when the tour came up, I said, you know, I can't be gone for 10 weeks. You know, my life just doesn't operate that way. And at that point, I was already playing with LA Guns, whose touring schedule is a little more conducive to my personal choices and whatnot. And I'm choosing at this point in my life to not be gone for more than a month at a time. And, respectfully, the conversation I had with Tammy was, you know, you can, you know, sub me out, you can fire me, I can quit, you know, what do you want to do here? And the, you know, conversations were all the same. It's like, you've been in the band 10 years, you're not going anywhere, we're a family, you know, but also what do we do? So a friend of mine here in LA, this kid Sam Bam Colton, who's probably going to be famous in the next 5 years, this guitar player kid, plays with pretty much everyone in town, had the time off, and I brought him in to sub for me, and he did the tour and is doing a couple other shows with them here coming up. But, you know, I don't even think they're touring until for a while. So I may do some slug stuff with them. I may not. It's kind of up to Tammy. But the last conversation I had was, the door's still open. And, you know, like I said, after 10 years, you know, that's a long time. That's a really long time to be in a band. And so I love those guys. I just can't do everything anymore. And the same thing kind of, you know, conversation transpired when I came into LA Guns too. You know, it was like I was basically coming in to cover a guy named Adam Hamilton for a tour. And then it just, you know, for personal reasons, worked out on everybody's part where I just basically stayed. But, you know, if there was something that I couldn't do, then he would do it. So it's, you know, it's not, you know, I think I'm still a member. I'm still listed on the website and all that stuff and whatever else. And so that's kind of the medium-sized answer to that. And, you know, I have no reason to quit the band. I never would. You know, I just, you know, it's like having a job. It's like, well, hey, guys, I'm going on vacation or there's some stuff going on where I can't maybe come into the office for 10 days or whatever the fuck it is. And I chose to not do the summer tour a few months ago. And it was interesting seeing people pop up on the internet chiming in with their own invisible two cents about, like, well, I heard, and, oh, well, I read in a chat room. It's like, yeah, man, I just talked to the guy on the phone for 45 minutes. I'm pretty sure I have more of an inkling as to what's going on than you do, but whatever. So yeah, that's it. Still, I'm still, as far as I'm concerned, I'm still in Faster Pussycat, you know, so that's that.
Well, that's good to hear.
Hopefully that won't change. And, you know, same thing with Guns, you know, I've been with those guys now for almost a year and a half. I guess not that long, maybe a year and a quarter, but, you know, just doing what I do.
Let me make sure I understood you correctly. So you're not really trading off with Adam Hamilton anymore?
Yeah, I don't believe that that's the scenario anymore. I mean, I can't give you a 1,000% answer, but I mean, in 15 months, he hasn't come and done any shows. So, but at that, also at the same time, like if there was something that I couldn't do, I would imagine they would have him do it. So it's not, you know, I don't know. I'm not issuing some official press statement saying what is or isn't happening in LA Guns, but, you know, I mean, he's busy being a producer and recording albums with people like William Shatner and Hasselhoff and, you know, some LA Guns stuff and a bunch of other stuff. And he's got a family and everything else. It's not conducive, just like my, it's not conducive to my life to fuck off for 3 months at a time. It's not conducive to his life to be touring either. So just on a different scale. So
I had understood that the reason he couldn't do the longer tours was because he had kids. So yeah, it's great to hear that, you know, he's doing some stuff and that you're kind of the main LA Guns second guitarist, rhythm guitarist.
Yeah. So. Yeah. I mean, I'm definitely the main guy at this point. I mean, that's why all the promo photos and, you know, even so, I think even the Twitter and social media accounts are only list my name. So, but I also think that if there was an issue or something like that where, you know, let's say I had a wedding to go to or something like that, or a funeral, God help, you know, whatever, I'm sure Adam would be the guy to step in because obviously, you know,
yeah. So,
but you know, that doesn't make him necessarily the sixth Beatle or whatever. But again, like I said, it's not really my place to say what is or isn't, you know, I mean, that's all up to Tracy and Phil and management and all the other moving parts in that camp, you know?
Yeah.
As I normally would say here is I go, I just work here. So,
so what is it like to work with Facey and Trill with Tracy and Phil?
Yeah. I do that too. My friends in high school used to make fun of me and I would say, I would say swool and queek and I'd get my words all jumbled. it's pretty swool. Yeah. Dude, I mean, Tracy and Phil are the best. I couldn't speak highly enough of either of them without sounding like I was making it up. You know, the thing is that being in Pussycat for 10 years and then, you know, having maybe another 7+ years of, or 8 years of career before that, that a lot of people maybe aren't delving into just because it's not the same genre or genres, I should say. I've worked with a lot of people and off stage, on stage, side project, main project, punk rock bands, heavy metal, industrial, goth metal, hair metal, a lot of stuff. And I've encountered a lot of personalities and I can say without a doubt, hands down, this is the easiest camp I've ever worked with. The most conducive, well, I keep using that word, the most, professional and easygoing. And actually, my stage manager came by yesterday to drop off a suitcase to me. And he's staying at the time. He's staying up at Tracy's house, which is maybe a mile from me. We're both sort of, he's definitely, in what I would call the Hollywood Hills. I'm sort of at the foot of the hill, but nonetheless, he's walking distance.
Okay.
Aside from all the hills. And, so he brings me the suitcase and I was like, well, hey, tell Tracy I love him and I'll see you guys in 2 days. And our tech or stage manager, whatever you call him, Fitz, goes, he goes, man, he goes, you guys aren't right. He goes, you guys all love each other and get along and like each other. He goes, so not rock and roll, you know, and he's right though. I mean, not the rock and roll part, but you know, everybody gets along great. Phil still sings his fucking dick off and sounds just like, you know, the albums, and Tracy's playing as better than I've ever seen in the 12 years I've known him. And, you know, it's a really great camp and a fun band to be in. And, you know, my role is pretty obvious. You know, I get on stage, I support, you know, I play. I called myself the rhythm guitar once in an interview and Tracy got mad and called me the other lead guitar player. So
okay.
I was like, well, all right, well, whatever. So I'm supporting his role as the fucking man, the myth, the legend, Tracy Guns, you know? So it's a fun gig. It's, you know, I really like the environment. I can't even, you know, on record, I can't even go into like how happy it makes me to actually be working with people that all get along and don't, you know, have issues with each other or aren't volatile, et cetera. So it's a nice change considering some of the other gigs I've had in my life. You know, I'm not going to name names, but most of them. And so, you know, it's a good family environment. We've got a really great team management wise and, you know, blah, blah, blah. It's fun. I like it. It's a good gig.
I'm glad to hear that.
Yeah, thank you.
I've always kind of thought of Phil and Tracy as John Bon Jovi and Richie Sambora, Steven Tyler and Joe Perry, you know, Phil Lewis and Tracy Guns. They were just a progression of great vocalists and guitar players. Good partnership. That's how I've always thought of them. And
Yeah, great songwriting partners.
Yeah, and having been in the audience when you played in Portland last Friday, I can back up what you just said about Phil sounding the, you know, as good as he's ever sounded, and Tracy shredding as well as he's ever played.
Right. Yeah, well, that's good to hear.
I mean, it was just a great show. I loved it, and you know, obviously the audience loved it. I do want to talk to you about some of your other projects, but before I do that, what's your favorite LA Guns song to play?
Ooh, you know, I'm going to just go right off the bat and say Hellraiser's Ball, actually. I think that's on the 2000-ish album Waking the Dead. And it's just a fucking, what's the word I'm looking for? A barn burner?
Okay.
It's a great, it's just got this great riff. And then besides that, probably One More Reason. Or Over the Edge. I mean, I could keep going. It's hard to say. It changes kind of like week to week.
I'm going to play your favorite LA Guns song to play. What is that again?
Let's play Hellraiser's Ball off Waking the Dead.
All right. Hellraiser's Ball off Waking the Dead from LA Guns. You said another of your favorite songs to play, Ace, is what?
Over the Edge. Yeah, Over the Edge for sure.
All right, let's spin that. One of the things that the Hard, Heavy, and Hair show is famous for is we play deep cuts. We play a lot of tracks. For the uninitiated, a deep cut is an album track that wasn't released as a single. A lot of the singles are decided on by the record companies. So the band may record a favorite song that just doesn't sound like a single to the band, to the record label. So
yeah.
What is one of your favorite LA Guns deep cuts? Maybe that you wish you could play on stage or you just wish more people would hear.
I mean, if you're talking old school stuff, I would say probably Bitches Back. Or I'm trying to think stuff that isn't a single. You know, it's funny because admittedly, a lot of the songs I only know as like, you know, that riff in F sharp that goes like doo-doo-doo-doo.
Yeah.
So, I'm trying to think of stuff that we play or that I might want to play that's not issued as a single. I was going to say Stay Away off The Devil You Know, but I guess technically that was a radio single, one of the early ones, went promoting the record. I don't know. I guess I would just go with Bitches Back or... at this point, I might even have to pull out a record because I'm not even sure of anything off the top of my head. You know, because the catalog now is kind of lengthy, so a lot of the stuff, aside from maybe the first two records, a lot of the stuff I'm not super well-versed in because it's not stuff that we would ever play. Maybe, I don't know, Sticky Fingers off the Missing Piece has got a really great riff. I don't know. Let's go with that. Let's go with Sticky Fingers off Missing Piece.
Okay. All right, so let's give that a listen. Sticky Fingers off the Missing Piece. I know your influences are varied and include punk and metal bands and even the Beach Boys, and you're in a lot of different projects. What brought you to hard rock? Faster Pussycat, LA Guns, what got you into playing this kind of music?
Well, okay. When you ask that, do you mean what got me into like wanting to play that type of music or what got me into like literally being in these bands?
Let's go with both. What got you into playing that type of music?
Okay, well, let's see if I can wrap this up in a tight little nugget here. I was playing in a lot of punk bands in my early 20s, some, I guess, more known than others. And I was playing in a band called the U.S. Bombs, and I guess they were kind of popular in the 90s, but whatever. And my booking agent was a guy named Charlie Overby, and Charlie Overby had a band in the 80s called Big Bang Babies, which is where, if you're familiar with a guitar player named Kerry Kelly,
He's
a Night Ranger now, but he used to play for Alice Cooper and Slash the Snake Pit and Rat and a bunch of other bands. Actually, he was in LA Guns, too. But anyway, so that's where Charlie came from, is he was in this band with Kerry Kelly, or actually that's where Kerry started, but I digress. So Charlie obviously knows a lot of these types of bands and people. And he saw me play with this punk band, and he goes, "Hey, you look like you're a rock and roll guy. What are you doing playing in these punk rock bands?" And I said, "Well, you know, I'm trying to kind of network into more of the rock scene." And he said, "Oh, that's convenient because I've got this project called Charlie and the Valentine Killers." And it was sort of an Americana, like Social D meets Bruce Springsteen with a little bit of, Nashville mixed in there. And the band, he was backed up by Chad Stewart from Faster Pussycat and Jerry Montano from Danzig and Brian Forsyth from Kix. So I joined his band and we did a tour with David Allan Coe and some shows with Headcat, you know, Lemmy and Slim Jim's band. And so that's kind of how I met a lot of these Hollywood rock guys. I started hanging out at the Rainbow. I started, you know, networking and all these other things. And I had a couple other gigs. I had this residency band here in town also I was playing in for about a year called Switchblade Kitty with four female singers. Eventually, two of them and myself would quit the band and start a different band called Butcher Babies, but that's a whole other thing. So that's kind of how I met the Faster Pussycat / LA Guns camp, was through that sort of gig. And eventually Danny and Chad from Faster Pussycat, who were actually both at the time playing in Tracy's version of LA Guns with Jizzy Pearl, needed a guitar player in Faster Pussycat. Bob's Your Uncle, they asked me. I joined the band. That was 2009. Did my first tour with them in 2010. And that's kind of it. And then it's kind of coincides with, me, you know, as a guitar player wanting to play rock music. I was kind of listening to less, Stiff Little Fingers and more Thin Lizzy, less Misfits, more Alice Cooper, you know, et cetera, et cetera. I just wanted to play in a rock band rather than continue to play in punk bands. You know, I had done some time in a band from New York City called Murphy's Law that is kind of a legendary hardcore punk band, and the U.S. Bombs, and I toured with a band called Madcap that had a record deal with Victory when I was 19 until I was about 22. So I had done this whole punk rock scene thing kind of to death, and then also, you know, as a guitar player, I just wanted to do something that was a little more interesting, and I was listening to more rock music and less punk rock, and it just they happened to coincide and ended up joining a rock band, and that was it.
Nice. Are you playing Monsters of Rock Cruise this year again, or?
I have no idea. I have so little idea that I'm not even going to give you an answer.
Okay.
So it's not a no, but I also am not going to, you know, get into it because it's not my place to discuss. So it's, again, it's just like the Gelly Gun stuff. It's like, that's totally up to Tammy. Last I heard was potentially we would be doing it as a 6-piece. I don't even know that Sam Band's available to do it. I know that I'm going to be on the cruise anyhow. So, you know, if they want me to come up and play, I'll play. If they don't, no big deal. If they want me to play with everybody, that's also cool with me. So, but to give you a shorthand answer, I have no idea.
Okay. Any jam sessions you might do on the cruise?
Usually that stuff is sort of last minute. So, again, no idea.
Okay.
You know, it's still 2 months out. So I don't know. And as far as I'm concerned, if I never have to do a jam again, that is okay.
Oh, why is that?
Well, I was pretty heavily involved in this sort of little jam scene that's going on here in Hollywood. There's basically one every night of the week. And maybe about 6 years ago, I started doing them as often as possible. And I've done a lot of, you know, like the Rock Against MS benefit and some other charitable jams, which I really do love and being involved in. But more or less, I just, when I get home from tour, what I don't want to go do is get on stage and jam some fucking cover song, you know? So, I just did it a lot and
got, you know, burned out.
I'm pretty much burnt out. So, I love attending. I went to one last night, but do I want to get on stage with one? Nah, I'm okay.
Okay.
It's a nice way to see a lot of people that I'm friends with all at once, but, it doesn't necessarily require me to get up and play, Pour Some Sugar on Me or something like that, you know? So the last one I did, and you know what, that being said, is I do like doing them if someone I'm friends with or someone, you know, unique or whatever is in town or something special. When I'm just, you know, when they call me, whether it's, you know, I'm not going to get into it, but whether it's this jam or that jam or the Whiskey or Lucky Strike or the Viper, when they're just trying to fill a gap with guitar player X, I just don't have any interest in that. But like the last thing I did was I got on stage and played a couple Warrant songs with Robert Mason, who's a really good friend and sings for Warrant for the last maybe 10 years or so. And that was cool. And that was like special because I'd never been on stage with him and he's a friend and he was in town. So something like that is totally cool. I love doing that. But when they're just like, hey, we can't get anyone else to fucking come play these Guns N' Roses songs with the other guys that you've played with 64 times, do you want to come down and do it? I'm like, nah, doesn't really sound that appealing.
Totally understandable. So you've played with a lot of people. Who would you most like to play with that you haven't yet?
I mean, if I'm, I don't know, God, that could be anybody. Alice Cooper's a dream. Or Glenn Danzig. I'm a huge Misfits Sam Hain Danzig fan, have been since I was a kid. You know, and since those are only a couple degrees away, I guess those are sort of not that outlandish. It's not like I'm saying the ghost of David Bowie. But I don't know. Maybe a little more realistic than that. Maybe, not that I haven't already, but I would love to play with Steven Adler again. I've played with, been on stage with him a good 15 times or so. That was always fun. I don't know. Slash? I don't know. You know, anybody from the Guns camp, even playing with Gilby is always a blast. So, you know, like if he had some shows and wanted to entertain the idea of having a second guitar player, I would love that. But, I don't know. Nobody. Nobody really. Okay. My dog. I don't know.
Okay. So that segues into, you're very much into pit bulls, right?
Yeah. I'm a big pit bull advocate.
Can you tell us a little bit about that? And I know you did some charity work recently.
You know, as far as the charity stuff, I mean, I try just to be an advocate and dig up, you know, as much, I don't even know, like just try to network and make people aware of basically the plight of the pit bull type. You know, they've been maligned so much in the press. It's unfortunate because in all my years, I've had several of them. It's interesting to see how people react to them because they might have read some news article. And I mean, you're talking about, you know, an occasional incident, which ends up being a fraction of a fraction of a fraction of a percentage. I think the actual percentage when you're getting into the millions of these types of dogs is it's like 0.0001. It's like there's maybe a bite, and that's not a fatality or someone who's mortally wounded or something awful like that. I mean, you're just talking statistics of like, a reported incident, which could be at this point in time, anything. somebody's dog biting another dog or whatever. But, you know, the other time, it's like there's this meme that's going around that I like to share. That's like, and in other news, you know, 74 million other dogs did nothing but just be dog. You know, 74 other million pit bulls did nothing but, you know, love their family and just be a dog. You know, so what's that old expression where it's like, you know, judge the actions of the, I don't know, you know, judge the deed, not the breed and all that stuff. And, you know, I just, I really identify with the sort of underdog vibe that they have, pardon the pun. And, you know, I think they're great dogs, you know, especially when given proper socialization and treated like a dog and loved and, you know, valued. And so again, like I said, socialized, you know, my dog's never struck a dog and she's a pit bull. You know, she's definitely had to defend herself and been attacked by other dogs. She was mortally wounded, if you will, 2 years ago and cost $30,000 to save her life.
Wow.
Another dog, boxer mix. It's a long story, but who wasn't a pit bull basically ripped her throat out. You know, I was lucky enough that she pulled through, and I was lucky enough to have the support of a really great fan base to help contribute. I reluctantly allowed a friend to run a GoFundMe page that covered about maybe 60% of her medical costs for that. But, you know, I just, I'm not really a philanthropist, you know, but I do believe in having a cause. Like my sort of old adage is like, you know, there's more to life than just sex, drugs, and rock and roll. And the way I was raised and the things I've experienced in my life, and I'm just happy to have something to sort of stand by besides just like, oh, I like horror movies and playing guitar, you know. So any way I can give back, I'm happy to. You know, I probably donate personally several thousand dollars a year to dog related, not just pit bull, but just dog related you know, organizations and stuff. And, you know, I just try to do what I can. Like, my living room right now is a mess because there's three giant bags full of Toys for Tots stuff that are getting picked up shortly. And so I'm happy to do what I can and use the little bit of a platform I have to draw some attention to the cause that I'm into. And, you know, if other people want to get on board with it, which a lot of them have, then great. You know, I'm doing something with my, you know, time on earth besides just playing in a rock band. And, you know, that's kind of it.
Well, I'm sure if the dogs could thank you, they would.
They do in their own way.
It's an important message. You always hear about the bad things, you know, it's with everything else, like with everything else. You hear about the bad things, but nobody talks about, you know, like you were saying, the 74 million times nothing happened.
Yeah.
Oh, so you're also a whiskey man.
Yeah.
So am I. What are some of your favorite whiskeys?
Well, I'm pretty boring. I'm just a Jack Daniels neat guy. So, you know, my drink of choice is a Jack and Ginger. I can't remember what it was. It was Jim Beam, but it was a variant that I had in Portland, actually, funny enough, and because the venue didn't have Jack, and I can't remember what label it was, but that was really good. Makers, I guess, is great. I don't know. I don't really deviate because most places have Jack, and that's just been my go-to for about 15 years. I'll tell you one thing I won't.
Yeah, Makers is usually mine.
Yeah, great, great.
Sorry.
No, great whiskey, right? And I've got a bottle of that in the pantry. The one thing I won't drink is Jameson unless I'm forced to. It just doesn't do it for me.
So not an Irish whiskey fan?
No, not particularly.
I can't do rye myself. I love bourbons. I love whiskey. I'll do Irish whiskey or Japanese, but I just I don't care for rye.
Yeah.
So you've always got great road stories. Do you have one you could share?
Let's see. Road story. Yeah, I mean, there's always, you know, tour pranks and whatnot. you know, like end of tour prank. Pussycat, one time we were on tour with John Karabi, and it was his last night of the tour, and we all came on stage with cowbells during his last song, which is Hooligan's Holiday from that Motley Crue record.
It's a great song.
And we all were banging on, yeah, great song, great record, and banging on this cowbell or cowbells during the choruses and annoying him. That was fun.
did he ever miss a line? Or
I think we just made him laugh. A lot of them are stuff I don't want to commit to tape.
Understandable.
Touring with Jizzy Pearl when he was in LA Guns, and also later on when he was in Quiet Riot, is always fun because I'm sure a lot of people, if they are aware of Jizzy Pearl, are probably also aware of this, but just in case they're not, he's really an intellectual. Like, he's really too smart for his own fucking good. And so he's fun to hang out with. I got a lot of fond memories of sitting in parking lots, going through bottles of wine with Jizzo, and heckling him while he was on stage, like popping up and yelling stuff like, you know, I don't even want to say it, just fucking with our friends, you know what I mean? And that kind of stuff. I don't know. Good. The problem is there's something like this goes on every third day, and it just becomes so the norm that you don't really commit them to memory. Tour stories. I mean, you know, the kind of stuff where you get like the mother-daughter couple or team trying to get you to go home with them. And
I've had those.
Just, you know, you got to laugh that kind of stuff. Laugh that kind of stuff off. You know, and it's like, nah, I'm okay. But, I don't know. I don't really know. I guess I'm gonna take the fifth here.
Okay. So thank you for the tales you did tell.
Yeah.
So you've got a thing for Ouija boards. For people who don't know, your branding and even at least one of your guitars carries a Ouija board designed or Ouija board inspired motif.
Yeah.
Which fits perfectly when you play The Devil You Know. What's up with the Ouija boards?
I don't even know how to get into that. Always had an affinity for scary stuff, horror movies. My dad used to make me watch them when I was a little kid, and that's just part of pretty much who I am. I mean, if you saw my place, it's covered in, you know, human remains and the life-size skeleton and a bunch of vintage one sheets or horror movie theatrical release posters, and you know, it looks like Halloween threw up in here. But so the Ouija board thing, I had one when I was a kid. I found one on the street, and it just, you know, was seemed extra spooky, and you know, just it just appeared one day outside of my friend's car, and he made me put it in the trunk. He didn't want it in his car, and I just always had a fondness for him since, and I casually collect them. I have one that's from the late 1800s from France, and one from the 50s, and a couple from the 60s, you know, a couple modern ones, and people tend to give me stuff too. I have a Ouija board blanket, and a Ouija board rug, and a Ouija board bottle opener, you know, that kind of bric-a-brac, and so it just seemed like a good motif to run with. And you know, I had that guitar made by this company in New Jersey called Black 35 Guitars, by a guy named Anthony. So that guitar is one of a kind. It would burn for me. What else? You know, like a lot of my merch has similar Ouija motif. I have a plaque at the Rainbow I have a reserve table there. That's the same thing. It's got the Ouija board motif. You know, just become my little signature thing, you know. Although, to be honest, I can't remember last time I played with a Ouija board. It's been probably a couple years, but you know, I just like the spirit board spooky vibe. Even my chest piece, now that I think about it, my tattoo on my chest has some Ouija board motif in it too.
Nice. Anything else you want to talk about? Any of your other projects or, you know, the merch, anything like that?
Let's see. I've got a studio project called Neon Coven. That's kind of like Depeche Mode meets, Depeche Mode meets Nine Inch Nails meets Depeche Mode again. And we're playing our first full set next week at the Whiskey. That's the Toys for Tots drive. Again, kind of tied all back into the charitable cause thing. I've got merchandise through Depop. The Pitbull stuff, all the proceeds go to Pitbull Rescue Central. So if you're buying a t-shirt that says Miles Pit Pals with my dog's face on it, that looks kind of like the Motorhead War Pig, that all goes to charity. And staying really busy. I started doing a Patreon, a fan subscription service for some of the diehards, and that's been going really well. Kind of occupying a lot of my free time. And that's really it. Just staying busy. And, you know, I got home 36 hours ago. I leave again in 36 hours, you know, in and out of town. It's kind of my life in a nutshell. I'm just hanging out with the dog, and getting ready to get these holidays the F over with. And then that's really it, you know.
Where are you playing next?
Oh, and I guess I could touch on voiceover too. I do occasionally do some voiceover stuff. I've got a few shows currently on Netflix that have some dubbing from me.
What shows?
Season 3 of Money Heist. Season 3 of Money Heist on Netflix. A show called Marianne as well on Netflix. A couple other things. There's a band from Europe called the 69 Eyes. They just put out a new record.
I'm familiar with them.
The new record, West End, came out about 2 months ago. And if you get the new record, it comes with a 30-year anniversary documentary, and I narrate that. So, excuse me. So I do some voiceover work on the side occasionally here and there. I'd love to do more of it. So if anyone's listening and there's a cough into the phone, need some voiceover, feel free to hit me up. I also really want to do animation and character-driven stuff, but mostly I get cast as just my normal speaking voice, which is fine too, but definitely cartoons and animation or video games is where I'd like to go.
Do you have a characters demo?
Oh, yeah, actually I do, on SoundCloud. I don't know what the link is, but it might just be soundcloud.com/AceVonJohnson. If not, I would just search for Ace Von Johnson voiceover and then SoundCloud, and it'll come up.
Okay.
There's one that's just plain narrative and then one that's all animation. But let's see, shows. Yeah, I'm leaving tomorrow. We're going up to the Bay Area, or Sacramento, I should say, for a show. And then the next weekend, we have a casino date, and then it's Christmas, and then we have a string of dates, 2 in Vegas at Banff, one at San Diego at the House of Blues on the 30th, and then December 31st, New Year's Eve, at the Whiskey Go-Go. I imagine that'll might already be sold out. And then we're taking a little bit of a break for about 2 months and then heading to Europe. So that's kind of everything in front of me right now.
Well, it sounds like a busy winter season.
Yeah. Yeah. Pretty busy month for me here. And then I'm flying out to Philly to see the Misfits do a show out there as well. So I'm looking forward to that.
I bet that's going to be a killer show.
Yeah.
I've always been a fan of the Misfits myself. I haven't seen them. I don't think I've ever seen them live.
I've seen them in a few different incarnations, and I've seen 2 of the shows so far since they've done the reunion, and it's really awesome. It's cool, and some of those guys are pretty good friends of mine too. So it's cool to see them play these. You know, like I was at the Madison Square Garden show in New York or New Jersey?
New York.
About a month ago. Yeah, New York, and one of those places. And that was amazing, just to see my favorite band sell out a stadium like that, you know.
Yeah, I bet it was. Ace Von Johnson of LA Guns and Faster Pussycat, the LA Guns other guitar player, got to bill you correctly.
Yeah.
Horror movie fan, pit bull protector, and guitarist extraordinaire, thank you for joining me on the Hard, Heavy, and Hair show.
Of course, Brad. Thank you for having me.
Remember, to hear the music discussed in this interview, stream the on-demand Hard, Heavy, and Hair show at PariahRocks.com.
That's PariahRocks.com.
Also hit PariahRocks.com to stream or listen on a radio station near you. The regular 2-hour Hard, Heavy, and Hair show with me, Pariah Burke. Hard, Heavy, and Hair is your weekly dose of hard rock, heavy metal, and hair bands from the 70s, 80s, 90s, 2000s, 20-teens, and today, including the latest new releases, your old favorites, and deep cuts and rare hair, along with rock news and trivia.
This has been a Pariah Burke production. Copyright 2019. PariahRocks.com. The home of hard, heavy, and hair. Send requests, fan mail, and nude photos to hard, heavy, and hair on PariahRocks.com. Facebook, Instagram, and Twitter at PariahRocks.